We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what is going on? How you doing? Welcome to Talkin' Buffalo Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. Episode, by the way, 444. Of this podcast. Just keep chugging along, man. Hope everybody's doing well. It is casual Friday. Well, this is dropping on Friday. Anyway, thank you very much as always for checking in, whether you're on the audio side, whether you're checking this out on YouTube. As always, I appreciate all you. Like I said, casual Friday. That means I am joined as always by my good buddy, host of the Maintenance Day podcast, Joe Yernan. Let's... Before we even exchange any pleasantries, let me start right here, okay? I asked, and I'm gonna give our listeners, our viewers, a little bit of inside information on our process a little bit here, right off the jump. So the NFL schedule gets released Thursday at 8 p.m. Typically, Joe and I tape casual Fridays Thursday somewhere around lunchtime. That's what just works best for us. But every now and then, you know, if there's a good reason, we will hold off taping until late at night. Now, taping late at night kind of sucks. When I say late at night, we don't even start till 10:30, 11 p.m. That means we roll for an hour to an hour and a half. So you're talking 12:30. By the time I edit this, process it, you know, do a little bit of the normal podcasting stuff, it's 2:30 in the morning before I got it self-published and I could go to bed. If it's for a great reason, it's worth it. Like I remember Owen Power's first home game. I remember that we tape late at night. RJ's last home game or whatever it was. I don't remember what it was, but it was a couple weeks ago, and we did it again late at night. There was actually in the NFL draft. That's what it was too.
Yeah,
it was the NFL draft and also RJ. So we taped late at night. Those are commitments that are worth it. I asked Joe, Tuesday night, maybe Wednesday morning.
Yeah, Tuesday night, I think.
It was Tuesday night. I'm like, so what do you think about this week? Maybe we'll tape late at night because the NFL schedule comes out at 8 o'clock, and we'll want to talk about that and break that down. Joe's response, I'm only paraphrasing in the slightest here, was, are you fucking serious?
Yeah, that's almost a quoted exactly as what it was.
The NFL schedule released. In the world of Joe Yernan and Patrick Moran, because this is something we are on the same page, that ain't worth having to stay up and pull an all-nighter basically for. So on that note, we are taping this around 1-ish, and the schedule has not been leaked out by now. I thought maybe it would be. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And so as of right now, we know a handful of games, including one that we're going to talk about in a second. But anyway, how you doing? And I know you got a good joy out of Twitter on Thursday afternoon with that schedule leak. Twitter just dunking on pretty much everyone who's been following it for the last couple weeks.
I'm kind of mad at them, not for misleading everybody and, you know, just putting out stuff that, you know, plausibly believable. I'm more mad at them that they Scooby-Dooed themselves right away. Like they pulled the mask off immediately and were like, ha-ha, we fooled you.
Anyway.
Like, no, man, keep that bit going forever. Like until people are just like, no, this guy's full of shit. You got to ride that till it's done. Now, I mean, I'm just so disappointed. Like that, I get it. You want to put one over on people and be like, ah, got him. Like that's great. That's good fun. It's great trolling. But like, man, You had such a good bet. You just cracked 10,000, dude. Yeah. Like, keep it going until people, like, enough people are like, nah, this is bullshit. For people, like, you gotta ride that till it's completely kicked.
Sure. For people who don't know what we're talking about, there was a Twitter account. I don't remember what the handle was.
NFL schedule leaks
or something. And they were posting, admittedly, bullshit guessing games, you know, fake confirmed scheduling for certain teams, mm-hmm. and getting fans to follow. And they did get over 10,000 followers. So anyway, and by the way, also for people watching or listening, it is May. It is absolutely beautiful outside, which I got to point that out. I mean, how many weeks have we taped this show where I just bitched, like an old grumpy ass man about how cold it's been? I got to point out, it is absolutely lovely. With that, my man Joe Yurden, who's been doing this now for, we've been doing this Casual Friday for almost a year. That means, you know, that window's open.
Only a year
in the West Side.
It feels like it's been longer. I don't know.
We've been doing this every Friday for about a year now.
Wow.
A little bit more than a year, actually. I'm going to have to look it up, but I know it's really close.
I don't know why it feels longer. Like, it's been fun. Like, it's not like it's been like, Jesus, another Casual Friday, Pat. God, why do I do this? No, it's not like that at all.
But with the warmer weather, Joe's window pops open. And as we all know, Joe lives like pretty much next door to the fire department. So
yeah,
we're going to get back. And I kind of miss that, man. I kind of miss hearing fire trucks every single week. So when you hear it on the show, you know where it's coming from.
Yeah. I live on a very, not a very, well, it's a pretty busy street. Elmwood Village area. I'm not going to dox myself here, but man, as you're talking, a motorcycle goes roaring down the road, and I'm like, okay, all right. It's like on cue. We had that scheduled. I'm waiting for like a whole convoy of 18 wheelers or motorcycles come rolling by, so I can just be like, I can't hear a word you're saying, Pat. Sorry.
Right.
It's like doing this outdoors, but I'm not outdoors in the sunshine and having a good time. I'm in my tucked away in my apartment with, you know, well, I got the shades open at least, but yeah, it's noisy. Like, I didn't realize how much noise the windows keep out until I popped open the window the other day, and I was like, oh man, yeah, it's loud. Like, I'm cranking up the TV. I'm just kind of like, oh my god, like, okay.
Let's get into a little bit of schedule talk. And again, before we talk about the Bills schedule, what's your take on people? I know what it is, but you could tell everybody watching and listening right now. What's your take on this whole process? We get why the NFL does it. Mm-hmm. NFL is literally at 365 days a year. They want to be at the top of the news cycle every single mm-hmm. day. So we understand why, but some people, just whether it's guessing, whatever they're doing, man, yeah. It just absolutely dominates. Like, this week has been all about the schedule, trying to find out leaks and guessing games. What's your take on it? Especially when you know every single opponent that you're going to play.
That's my biggest issue with this. You already know who you're playing. Like, it's not even like it's a secret where,
and you know where it's going to be, whether it's on, right. You know, at home or on the road.
Right. So, I mean, like, okay, so they're playing the NFC, like the Bills are playing the NFC North teams this year. Like, okay. The only games I would care about when they're being played are what they're playing. Well, they're playing Green Bay. Are they playing Green Bay at home or in Lambeau?
They're playing Green Bay at home.
Yeah. So who cares? Like, big whoop. They're playing the Bears in the road, but A, the Bears stink, and who cares? Like, yeah. Are they going to play them in the beginning of September or like, you know, the end of December? Who cares? The Bears are bad. They should handily beat the Bears. So what? But like, you're playing Minnesota and you're playing Detroit, and like, if you're on the road, well, they're in domes, so who cares? You know, again, like, it's not even something where you can get like worked up about it, because it doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. So like, and you know, I get it. People want to start thinking ahead, and they want to, you know, maybe figure out like if they're going to do a vacation built around going to see a game or like a trip, whatever. Like, whatever the deal is, if they got family in that area, they'd be like, hey, we can go see family, blah, 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 blah. Like, fine, I get it. But man, oh man, like, it's, everybody just chill, please. Like,
I get it to an extent. I agree with you.
The thing that gets me though is like, are fans booking hotels and stuff like the second it comes out? I mean, probably there's some. I mean, that's like a sports writer thing though, man. Like, you know, every writer that travels, every single one, the second that schedule comes out, they've got the Marriott window open, and they got, you know, anything else they need to do, like the flight schedule, like, you know, flight stuff, whatever. They've got it open immediately to be like, book, 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 done. Like, that's, yeah, like, because they have to, like, that's the job. But like, I don't know, man. Like, it's goofy. But like, I don't know. I think you either have to be like, I don't give a crap, or you lean way into it and just be like, this is my life. I'm doing this. I'm going to figure out, like, I'm going to get the schedule matrix myself. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the NFL scheduler, you know, when I'm done doing this job. Like, that's going to be me. I'm going to do that. Just you either go all in, or you just say, I don't care.
I get it to an extent. I do understand fans want to, as soon as humanly possible, media people as well, like you said, mm-hmm. you want to start booking those trips and trying to plan as quick as you can. Now, if you could get information a week or two ahead of time, then I could see being as obsessive. But once it gets to be, I mean, what's the difference if you find out at noon or 8 p.m.? Is it really going to make that much of a difference? Mm-hmm. Now, I do, again, now to be fair, I spent 5 years in Florida, and I was very eager to find out every year when the Bills were coming to Miami, because I'd have a couple friends and they would come down, and sure. you know, that was a big thing. So that was fun. But yeah, on the whole, it's certainly not worth taping and staying up all night for doing this later. I will say, as of this
I was so annoyed when you were just like, let's do this late because the schedule. I was like, you paraphrased it correctly. Are you fucking serious? Like,
right. Well, I'll say this. So we're not going to talk about or guess. There's no sense of guessing, because by the time people are listening or watching this, they already know, because the schedule will be official. So
they've already booked their hotels and their rooms, and they're probably don't care about our complaints. They're going to be like, whatever, man, I already got it done.
We're not going to guess on this episode. We're not going to speculate on stuff that I don't feel comfortable knowing for sure that it's happening. I do know a couple, though. So as we tape this again, this is mid-afternoon on Thursday, and I want to save the best here for last, because I know you're going to have an opinion on this. It's already been confirmed by the league. The Bills are playing week two at home, Monday Night Football against Tennessee. We've known that now for a handful of days. That's week two, Monday Night Football. I also am confident in saying on this podcast, from people that I know and trust, that the Bills are absolutely, they're playing Christmas Eve, which is Saturday. There's only a couple games on Saturday, and they are playing. Mm-hmm. They're playing Christmas Eve against the Chicago Bears. So they're in Chicago, which is week 16. And I was kind of wrong there. I mean, they're playing Chicago Christmas Eve, but there's lots of games on Christmas Eve, playing a lot of games on Saturday. But they're playing Christmas Eve, Saturday, Chicago. The following week, they're playing Monday Night Football at Cincinnati, which is week 17. That will be the last Monday Night Football game of the year. So that'll be the ESPN Monday Night Football season finale. Buffalo at Cincy, that could be a huge game. We don't know the opponent, but you got to assume the Bills are going to be at home for week 18, because they're confirmed to play on the road week 16 and 17. And I've never heard of a team ever that had to play three straight road games to end the season. So you got to assume that they're going to be at home. And again, by the time you're listening, you already know this. I'm not going to talk about the first week, because I don't know, as we're taping this, heavy speculation is the Rams. But here is what I can confirm for sure, is my team, the Buffalo Bills, Joe Yurden's team, the Detroit Lions, are playing on Thanksgiving. That is happening. It is confirmed. I feel confident enough that I could talk about it on this show ahead of time now. The Bills will be at Detroit at 12:30 p.m. Thanksgiving Day. Now, everybody who, if you watch us or you listen to this regularly, you know Joe is a Lions fan and he's a Bills watcher. We talk about that all the time. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, man? Bills-Lions Thanksgiving.
I don't like it, and it's not for the reasons. Like, I'm used to the Bill or used to the Lions losing on Thanksgiving. Let's be real. Like, they're never good. They always, you know, and the NFL's always been really good about putting a marquee team against them to be like, yeah, whatever. Let's really show off how bad or how good the good team is, because these guys stink. So I'm used to that. I'm more annoyed because some friends of mine and myself, our plan was we were going to go, provided it wasn't Thanksgiving, we were going to go to Detroit for the game, because they, you know, COVID, all the stuff has kept people from going to, you know, kept us from doing any like road games. I mean, there's other reasons for stuff with some of my friends, but like, there hasn't been an opportunity like to go to a close road game anyways. Like, it's, you know, Detroit was like, oh, well, you know, easy drive, easy trip, you know, get there, you know, maybe go like the day before, hang out in Detroit, have some fun. and then go to the game Sunday, leave after the game, get home Sunday night. Great. Perfect. Thanksgiving? No. Absolutely out, because it's a holiday. Like that's not myself included. Our families are not that big into it to be like, let's drag everybody. We'll have turkey in the parking lot. It'll be great. Like, we're not doing that shit. Like, that's just not happening. So it's annoying from that perspective, because that's a slam dunk, easy road game to do, but you put it on a holiday, and it's a holiday that is meant to be hung out with family. It's not like it's like Arbor Day and you're just kind of like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, fine. We'll just, you know, we'll plant a tree on the way out. It's great. But, you know, it's Thanksgiving, man. You got to be home with family. Like, that's the thing. Like, you know, for myself personally, I've never been able to go home for Thanksgiving, because why? Well, the Sabres would have a home game the night before and the night after Thanksgiving. So going home was right out. Like, that was never happening. So, so like this year, I don't know, depending on like what happens, you know, career-wise, life-wise, whatever, like, I'm going to go home for Thanksgiving. There is no chance I'm going to Detroit for Thanksgiving. Like, I don't know, you know, maybe my friends get permission from their wives, their families, their girlfriend, whatever. They get permission from them to go to Detroit for a game. Cool. Good for them. But I ain't going. Like, sorry, I'm going to be with my family. Like, that's how it goes.
I'll
get to ignore the game too, like, which is great, because I don't need to watch them. It's the perfect combo. People are like, oh, what a bad game to start the day. It's like, don't watch. Like, sit around and smell the food being cooked. It's great.
There goes the my grand idea of inviting you to my house for Thanksgiving, and while you're sitting there on the couch watching the game,
the whole time,
having some hidden cameras posted up around various spots so they can see your facial reactions.
You know what those cameras would see? They would see me looking on my phone, just being like, I don't care about this. And even if here's the thing, like, even if the Lions are passably good next year, which, you know, they're starting to get
they're getting some good talk.
Like, you know, they're going to be on Hard Knocks this year. Dan Campbell's really likable.
Sure.
You know, they've got some nice offense, like, whatever. Like, I get it. I get why people are just kind of like, no, maybe they'll be okay. Like, no, man, it's Detroit. Like, whatever good things you might think happen will not happen. I guarantee that.
This will be the third time now in 4 years that the Bills are playing on Thanksgiving. Not a big fan either, personally. I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm not taking a pot shot at you and your team. I feel much better about it playing the Detroit Lions than I do if it would have been at Baltimore, because there were some rumors out there that the Bills are going to be playing at Baltimore.
Schedule guy said Baltimore.
Fake schedule guy, sure. It was going to be Buffalo at Baltimore Thanksgiving night. I remember back last year. Now, the Bills were, you know, significantly favored to beat New Orleans, but I still remember last Thanksgiving, I had some football anxiety going on all day. You're a Lions
fan. You sure it wasn't indigestion? Because that was like an 8:30 start. I couldn't blame you if you're just like,
you spent all day thinking about it. Now, you're a Lions fan. Forget about the fact that they're not good. You're used to this. This is what you know every year. You know that the team that you root for is playing at 12:30 on Thanksgiving. It's something that throughout the course of your adulthood, you've just become accustomed to.
Yeah.
This is not something
fun. Like, I actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I think you're it's great. Like, they've been doing it for 70 years now, like 60, 70 years. I think they've been playing on Thanksgiving Day. Like, people want to move them off there. And I'm like, listen, if you're moving the Lions off there, you got to get the Cowboys the hell off.
Yeah, no.
Because the Cowboys horned in on the action. Like, why should the Lions just have their own day for the game? We're America's team. Shut up.
Let me say this too, Joe. And this is why another reason why I don't want to. I mean, you talk about Detroit being improved, and I think they are as well. But let's just say that they're not, okay?
I'll tell you they're not.
I think
how about that? How about I take the mystery away?
They got some good young players, and I like their coach. But you know what I keep thinking about last year? I won't forget this either. I did a show on Saturday night at Resurgence. It wasn't my show. It was on someone else's show, Jay Spencer. Mm-hmm. And we had a panel of people on talking about the Jacksonville game. They were playing Jacksonville the next day. Mm-hmm. And everyone else refused to even talk about the possibility of losing to Jacksonville because it was the fucking Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. We all know what happened. The thought of the Bills playing on Thanksgiving and losing to the Detroit Lions quite literally would ruin my Thanksgiving. if it were to happen.
Well, as a Bills
fan. I can't imagine how like bigger fanatics of the Buffalo Bills would feel their Thanksgiving got spoiled. I don't know. I'm just not that guy. Generally speaking, the one thing I liked about the drought is year after year, the Bills barely ever played on primetime. If I had my way, and I've said this before, the Bills would be playing 17 games, 1 p.m. on Sunday. That's what I like.
It's the best.
That's the
best time.
And like, I don't, right. I agree. I obviously that's not the case anymore. You're quite used to that now at this point, or at least almost at every game, 1 p.m. on Sunday. I like that. That was the one good thing about sucking for the Bills that I actually enjoyed, because I love Sunday 1 p.m. football, mm-hmm. especially when my team is playing. I don't like Thursday night football. If the Bills lose, I kind of
Thursday night's horrible.
Well, even win or lose, actually, I don't care as much about Sunday when the Bills have already played. Or if the Bills are playing Sunday night or Monday night, I don't care as much about the afternoon slate. Mm-hmm. I like 1 p.m. Sunday. I just feel completely locked in. And again, I'm not going to guess because we're taping this ahead of time, but we know the Bills are going to have several non-Sunday afternoon games. How do you feel about, I assume you're the same way. Like, if you could be in charge of the Detroit Lions schedule, or any team, if you could be in charge of the Bills schedule, whoever it may be that you follow, do you like primetime games? I know I'm in the minority and I feel grumpy by saying this, but I don't. I like Sunday 1 p.m. That's who I am.
This is very old guy of me, but I used to really like, there used to be some kind of allure to it because the primetime games were,
sure,
it was Monday night football. That was, you know, and then Sunday night football. That was it. You know, you get the late game on ESPN on Sunday night. That, you know, that was pretty cool. It felt weird just because, you know, it wasn't a 1 or 4 o'clock game. You're just like, wow, there's another game. Like, okay, we got to stay up late, you know, cause, you know, I think it's some of those games like back, you know, late 80s, like they would throw the Raiders on because Bo Jackson was, you know, was great. So they're just like, throw them on Sunday night, throw them on Monday night. Like, great. Like, Raiders weren't that good. Like, they're okay, but like, whatever. But like, they had the stars. Now it's like, you've got a primetime game on a Thursday night, every Thursday.
I hate it. Yeah.
All the I would ban Thursday night games like instantaneously, just get rid of them. They're horrible.
Like, we know why they do it, but yeah, I agree. Like, football, it's just, I don't like it. Yeah.
Like your teams get a short week. Like, it's stupid. I hate it. I hate every bit of the Thursday night games, but like, there's nothing special about them now. You know, like the first couple of weeks of the season, like you're getting a Thursday night game. You're getting a Sunday night game. You're getting you might get two Sunday night games. You might get two Monday night games too. Like that. If your team's playing on the West Coast on Monday night and to open the season, you might be looking at a 10 o'clock start. Screw that, man. Like, that sucks. Like, there's no fun in that. Or, I mean, they switch around, you do a 5 o'clock and an 8 o'clock start, but even still, like 8 o'clock, the game's going to be on until 11:30. That's stupid. You're waiting all day, you know, for the stupid game. And I know I'm playing right into the Carrie Underwood Monday night song. Waited all day for Monday or Sunday night. Like, just, yeah, I waited all day because you idiots scheduled it for them. Like, I'd rather have it at 1 o'clock. Like, let me start my day with the game. It's over by 4. I can digest every bit of post game. Like, if it's a good turnout, I digest every bit of post game. If it's a bad game, I turn it off for a while. I'll dive into it when I want to after the fact, because that's how I am with, you know, a losing team. I'm just like, I just get out of my face. I don't even want to look at you. I'll look at it later when I want to, but. But like, there's not a lot of special stuff about primetime games. Cause like, I mean, the Thursday night thing ruins it because Thursday night is like every team in the league gets a Thursday night game. It seems like, I mean, you could basically set your watch by when, you know, Tennessee Jacksonville plays on Thursday night. Cause it happens every friggin' year. Like that's a Thursday night game. It's like, cool, I'll ignore it. Or like a Cincinnati Cleveland game. Like, cool. Yeah. Forget it. I'm not watching that one. Or, you know, a Baltimore Cleveland. Who cares? Like, you get these matchups where it just doesn't even matter anymore. And, you know, listen, I know like money factors into that. Like, that was like kind of a throwaway game, but now you get Amazon involved with stuff, you know, NBC's involved, ESPN, like everybody's throwing money. So they want, you know, some kind of marquee matchup on these games. And it's like, cool, I guess, you know, but geez, I don't know. I'm worn out by it. Like, it's just, it's too much. It's too much. It's not special anymore. It's not like I can get gassed up about, you know, if, you know, say Detroit ever gets good, I'm not getting gassed up about them being on Monday night or Sunday night football. Like, If anything, it's more stressful. It's just like, get it out. Like, I don't need all this attention. Please get it away from me. I don't want any of this. I didn't ask for this. Please.
I can understand when the Bills were on the come up over the last couple of years, and you're like, hey, look at my team. I want you to watch my team. Watch how good we are. You outside of Buffalo need to know how good we already know we are. I get wanting that at that point. Now, and I want to talk about this in a future episode as well. Now we're the hunted. You know, we're the Buffalo Bills are the favorites to win the Super Bowl right now. Mm-hmm. They're the hunted, and they're not the hunters anymore. And I don't know. One of the things I worry about, and again, we got plenty of weeks during the offseason to hit on this, but I want to spend some time talking about concerns over being the favorites. So that concerns me as well. I'll wrap this part up by saying this, though, when it comes to the Bills. If they're going to play on Thanksgiving, if they're going to play on Christmas Eve, and they are, I am glad it's Detroit, and I am glad it's Chicago, because, again, if you're a big fan and you're taking this shit personally, a Bills loss will ruin your Christmas. It'll ruin your Thanksgiving, and the likelihood of them beating those teams is pretty good. And by the way, they have played pretty damn well in prime time, especially Thanksgiving, over the last couple of years as well. But I don't know, man. Like I said, sometimes I feel like that grumpy old guy, you know, just pointing this and that.
Yeah.
I still miss the days where all the games except for the Monday night game were Sunday at 1 or 4, and by 7:30 p.m. you had your Sunday night to watch TV, hang out with your fam, whatever it was that you're going to do. But now it's football, football, football. And I get it. I mean, it's one of the biggest businesses on earth.
I'll tell you this. The scary thing for Bills home games is that they're going to get a lot more 4:30 games now too. Cause that was always like the New England time to play, even at home, like the Patriots would be playing somebody at 4 o'clock, because that's the sub prime time game. Like that's, you know, even more eyes. Cause you know, it's afternoon on the West Coast or whatever. The thought of the Bills hosting a lot of home 4:30 games is frightening, because everybody's going to still start tailgating the same time in the morning, and everybody's going to be gassed up for an extra 3 more hours. And then, you know, a couple more hours into the game. Oh my God. Like that's like that. If I'm the NFL, I avoid scheduling any 4 o'clock games in Buffalo, because my God, like that's, at least with like Monday night games for that reason, it's weird because you still got to go to work, or, you know, I don't know. A lot of people will take that day off and be like, whatever, I'm going, you know, I'm going to go tailgate all day.
Right.
But man, a 4 o'clock Sunday game that's deadly. That's a bad scene waiting to happen. If it turns out to be like an ugly game, like there's some like blown call or some shit, man, it won't be just dildos thrown on the field, man. It'll be everything else. It'll be throwing other fans on the field.
Well, yeah. And without guessing, I mean, again, we're taping this before the schedule actually comes out. One thing I'm confident in is barely half these games this year, or home or road, whatever it's going to be, are going to be Sunday 1 p.m. games. I don't like that. But on the other hand, a lot of people do. Anyway, here's what I want to do. I'll take a real quick break, and I want to come back on the other side. We'll talk Sabres. We're going to do our starting five draft like we do every week. But I also want to talk about something that I feel like does not get talked about enough in Buffalo in light of recent events that happened this week. So be right back with that.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, I am back. Casual Friday, Gio Yurden from Maintenance Day Podcast. So this week, and it got me thinking, and we're old. We're not old, but we're old enough to understand about Buffalo and sports and history more. And Bob Lanier passed away this week. And for people who don't know, this, in my opinion anyway, is the best athlete to ever come out of Buffalo, New York, ever. And if not the best, he's certainly the most accomplished. That's for damn sure. And you want to talk about a guy who's Buffalo born through and through. Born in Buffalo, went to Benning High School, went to St. Bonaventure for college. And this man, and again, not in an era nowadays where, you know, once in a while, Bonner or UB, they go on a little bit of a run and they're pretty good and they get a little bit of attention. This dude led St. Bonaventure to the NCAA Final Four. St. Bonaventure back in 1970, and they lost to Jacksonville in the semifinals. And he didn't play that game because he got hurt in the regional final. He hurt his knee the game before. But this guy, again, a legend from Buffalo, a legend in high school with the St. Bonaventure, was a legend in college, the first overall pick in the NBA draft. I think it was, I'm looking at my notes now, 1970 by the Detroit Pistons. He was an 8-time All-Star. He was an All-Star Game MVP. His number 16 that he wore in the NBA is retired by both the Detroit Lions and the Milwaukee Bucks.
Pistons.
Pistons, yeah, Detroit and Milwaukee.
The Lions should retire it too.
He's a, he's a Pro Basketball Hall of Famer. And for his career, he averaged 20 points and 10 rebounds. So he averaged 20 and 10 for his career. This guy's from Buffalo. And I understand why, especially younger fans are like, well, I've heard of him and I really don't know anything about him. Hopefully you do now. This guy is an icon. Again, he is the best to ever come out of Buffalo. The only other person I'll even hear an argument for is Warren Spahn. He grew up in South Buffalo in South Park High School, one of the you know, great baseball pitchers of all time. But Bob Lanier, we toss the term around GOAT all the time. Bob Lanier was the GOAT, man.
Yeah, he,
73 years old, by the way, he passed away this week.
I've gotten to know a bit about Bob's history because my dad, one of my dad's best friends in high school, my dad played high school basketball. He didn't play in college, whatever, it's fine. But one of his best friends was Billy Calbo, who was the starting point guard for the St. Bonaventure team in 1970. And so like my dad, you know, my dad was in Billy's wedding. So who else was in Billy's wedding? Bob Lanier.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Bob Lanier was one of the, was one of his groomsmen. Pretty, I don't know that he was his best man, but he was definitely one of the groomsmen. So I've seen the wedding picture and let me tell you, there's no more 1970s picture than that wedding photo. My goodness. The suits are incredible. Like I can't even describe them. They're just, it's amazing. But you know, my dad's like 6'2". He's like my dad's like my height, 6'2". And Billy's point guard size. And so like the whole wedding is just like guys are like there. And then there's Bob Lanier, seven foot tall, sticking out. And he's got the big afro. And it's just, it's, you know, and my dad would tell me stories about, you know, he'd go visit Billy at Bonna's and, you know, hang out, you know, party for the weekend, you know, whatever. And there's one story my dad tells me is like, you know, Bob was away for like that day. And so like Billy's just like, yeah, just crash in Bob's bed, just, you know, stay there. So Bob gets back a little early and my dad's sleeping. Bob comes in the room and he sees him. What are you doing in my bed? And he's like, oh, geez, I'm sorry, Bob. And he's like, no, man, I'm just kidding. Just stay there. It's fine. but you know, getting to hear about, you know, how good that team was in 1970 and, you know, learning about his career and, you know, how great he was with the Pistons and the Bucks. And he was just like just an incredible guy. I remember going, you know, my dad taking us to the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Mass, and walking in the front, you know, the front entrance. This is before they redid it. This is, you know, the Hall of Fame before they redid it was a little weird, but At the front entrance, they had one of Bob Lanier's shoes right at the front, right at the front entrance. And Bob, you know, Bob famously had size 22 feet, which is crazy. But to see like a shoe that big, I'm like, geez, like that's a boat. My dad's like, yeah, you should see him in person. I was like, I can't even imagine. I'd be stepping on his feet, you know, from 5 feet across the room. But like, you know, I met Billy a couple of times, and you know, I never got to meet Bob, unfortunately. But like the stories about that 70 team are just like something else, because that team was really good. And Bob getting hurt, you know, before facing Jacksonville, which Jacksonville's starting center was Artis Gilmore, you know, another great NBA player,
and big man,
big guy. And the fact that, you know, Bob wasn't there to, you know, D up against him and, you know, probably outduel him. Nothing, you know, no slight against Artis. Artis was a good player, but like Bob Lanier would have had his day with Artis. Now it would have been a great matchup, but
sure.
You know, when you got that kind of a discrepancy, like you know, Bonas didn't have that good a shot. They played really well against Jacksonville, but it's back in those days, the way the game was played, if you had a big guy that was really good like that, you could go really far. And that was proof for Bonas. Like they were able to go really far because they had an ace in the hole, you know? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, man. And again, he played really before our time, you know, especially in college and even in the NBA. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, cause I am old. You know, I was alive when he was playing. I was alive when he was making All-Stars games, but I personally don't remember him playing. I was too young for that. But I will say this. Now you live in the West Side of Buffalo. You live in the city. I was born and raised on the west side of Buffalo. I went to Lafayette High School. So I know I've always been very partial to the Buffalo public schools. I felt like there's been some great athletes, especially basketball players who, you know, never really got the respect they deserve. But I remember even, in the late 80s, early 90s, hearing about so much about Bob Lanier. And like I said, man, it just, I didn't want to do a podcast episode and have somebody who I consider, and I think a lot of people do and should consider the greatest to ever come out of Buffalo, and at least not acknowledge what he meant to sports here and to carry a team like St. Bonaventure to the Final Four. It blows my mind. And again, it's not like he was great in college, was a high draft pick, and then was a bust in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Your boy made 8 All-Star games and averaged 20-10 for his entire career, got his number retired by 2 teams. So I don't know, man. I feel like if anybody's like Warren Spahn has his own street in South Buffalo, Warren Spahn Way, I'd like to see something done with Bob Lanier, man.
Maybe
kind of statue, something symbolic, downtown Buffalo or something like that. I feel like younger sports fans should be educated more on just how impactful and amazing this guy was.
Yeah, even up by where Bennett High School, I don't know that it still works as a school. Not being from here, I don't know.
Same,
I don't know
same.
Bennett.
I think it is, but yes.
But I think where Bennett was where FC Buffalo plays their games now. I think that's
All High Stadium, or that's what it was called anyway.
Yeah, I think it's still called All High. But there's a lot of side streets there. Even like that stretch of Main Street, call it Bob Lanier Way, put a statue somewhere up, like you know, put it right in front of, you know, Bennett. Like make that, do something with that, because the guy deserves. And you only have to, like, there, TNT did a quick, well, like a 5-minute panel discussion, you know, the night where they found out Bob died, and you could see Ernie Johnson was pretty broke up. He was affected by it.
Sure.
But hearing him talk about Bob Lanier, hearing Kenny Smith talk about him, hearing Shaq talk about him. Now Shaq's story was great, because Shaq talked about how, like, you know, he didn't pay attention to any NBA stuff growing up as a kid.
Right.
And, you know, he said, Shaq talked about the first All-Star game he went to, and he's got his old man with him. You know, his old man was, you know, Army guy, ball buster. And Shaq, you know, Shaq's walking around and Bob Lanier's there. And his old man goes, you know who that is? He's like, yo, you got to see that. You see who that is? And he's like, no, I don't know who that is. Like, you know, slaps his arm. He says, that's Bob Lanier, man. Have some respect. And right. So like he goes and, you know, shakes hands with Bob and talks to him. And, you know, he talks about how, like, later down the road when Shaq had his like shoe line going, and he looks at Bob's feet. He's like, man, your feet about as big as mine. He's just like, yeah, they are. And he's like, I got you. I'll hook you up with shoes. Like, it's like nice thing to do for a guy. Like, but to be able to have, like, you know, a reputation where everybody was like, he's just the nicest guy. Barkley went on and on and on about how nice of a guy Bob Lanier was. And it's, I mean, that's a huge credit to somebody like that, you know, because you think about the, you know, the big guys back in the day, like Bill Russell commands everybody's respect, you know, because, you know, all the titles, you know, all the crap that he had to go through, you know, everything that he did in the game, all that stuff. It's just like, he's, you know, he's the chairman of the board. He walks in the room, everybody stops. But Bob Lanier was the guy that everybody was like, man, respect that guy, respect everything that he's ever done, because he did it well. You know, like, you know, Willis Reed gets a lot of hype for what he did with the Knicks, and he was great. Willis Reed was really good. But man, Bob Lanier never really got that attention. You know, it comes from playing in Detroit, comes from playing in Milwaukee. I mean, playing in Milwaukee after Kareem was there, you know, like that's some, I mean, big shoes to fill, but like,
yeah, almost
Bob Lanier had big shoes, but like, I mean, Kareem is, you know, Kareem's, you know, top three, top two all time. Like that's, you know, that's a tough guy to follow up, but they retired his number still. Like that's you're able to do that in those years following. That's pretty damn impressive. So I, you know, to have that kind of reputation where everybody's just like, man, I love Bob Lanier. That's, I don't know. Like that's a hell of a legacy to have, to go, like, to go along with all the accomplishments on the court, to have people just be like, man, I love that guy. I mean, that's great. That's beautiful.
I'd love to see this. Like I said, I would love to see the city do something further. I know they've honored him in some ways. I'd like to see more, but I think he's deserving. To put a wrap on that, every week, Joe and I, as people, if you're watching and listen, you know, our favorite thing is our starting five draft. We have a lot of fun with that, and we do a variety of topics. Let's put it this, and we're going to get to ours in just a couple minutes here for this week. But I'll say this, if Joe and I were ever to do a best athlete to ever come out of Buffalo draft, we would be fighting each other to get the number one pick so we could take Bob Lanier. There wouldn't be any controversial decisions there at the top. Even I couldn't fuck that up, man. Bob Lanier is the GOAT when it comes to Buffalo. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. Anyway, all right, so before we get to our 75 draft, I do want to talk, well, sort of Sabres for a minute. By the way, thank God, at least I did minimal prep with you, because I told you what we were going to talk about. The Amherst were winning 3-0 at the end of the first period in game one against Utica in the playoffs. I stopped watching, or I got off Twitter. I didn't watch it. I got off Twitter. I assume they won. I in my notes, I'm like, I'm going to ask you, you know, about game one, the Amherst winning. Joe's like, they lost. It's 6 straight unanswered goals. I almost don't even want to know what happened in that game, but here's what I do know. And I'm going to butcher. I'm so terrible at hockey names. Archu
Ruotsalainen.
Him.
Yeah.
He scored 2 goals. He has 5 goals in 3 playoff games. And you put up a tweet this week. I thought this was a really, really good tweet, and I think it's very thought-provoking. I want to share it with people if you're watching, or if I'm going to read it. Joe tweeted, which is more believable? And he pointed out 2 scenarios. He says, Archu is either 1, a fantastic AHL player, but a questionable NHL level talent, or 2, he's a definite NHL level player who has not gotten a fair shake at that level. Let me ask you this. Now, I mean, you asked this as a question. You didn't put it up as an official poll like we did. So, you know, you don't have actual statistical data. But from what you gathered, it was pretty damn close, man. It was kind of split down the middle. So fans seem to have a pretty divided opinion on that. What were your thoughts on that? And what are your thoughts on that? Because again, we spent so much time, Joe, talking about a lot of these young guys, Quinn, Paterka, obviously Owen Power's up now, even guys who are, you know, firmly established like Darlene. He had a cup of coffee this year with the Sabres. Didn't really work out. But to your point, man, is it because he didn't get a fair shake, or is he just really good at the AHL level, but not quite there at the NHL level? We have known many Amherst in the past to be like that. What are your thoughts? I think this is a really good topic.
Yeah, I the only reason I asked was because I was honestly curious. You know, I talk with Lance every week. I talk with, you know, a couple of the other guys on the beat just to see, you know, just to kind of get a feel like where, you know, what they think, or what, you know, what their opinion is of them.
Sure.
And you know, because, you know, you get stuck in your own little world. It's a little bit of a, you know, closed circle, I guess, where you just, you know, you hear those opinions, just kind of like, okay. But I wanted to know what people thought of them. And, you know, obviously the only people that are going to answer are people that are watching a lot of the Sabres and or the Amherst.
Sure.
So I was really curious to know what the feeling was. And you're right. It was basically down the middle. A lot of people thought like No, him having this kind of success in Rochester is his peak. Like, this is where he'll be the absolute best. But there was an equal number of people that were just like, man, you know, I wish the Sabres had had more of an opening for him in the lineup, because I think he could do really well there. And I'm like, well, I mean, he could have a role in the lineup. He's just, you know, he has to carve his way into it is the thing. But that leads to the question, has he gotten a fair shake? You know, 35 NHL games isn't a lot. Like, that's a pretty small window. And, you know, how many of those came with, I have to look for myself, how many of those came under Ralph Krueger, and how many came with, you know, with Granato? Like, that's a big thing. It's a big thing to wonder about. And you know what, honestly, he's gotten a fair shake there too. Cause I think he got about 17 games with Ralph, and he's gotten about 18 with Granato. So, I mean, both guys got to look at him. Both guys decided, like, I don't know, either he's not ready or he's not a fit, which, you know, he's got 51 points in 57 games with the Emmerichs this year. He's crushing it. Goals in the playoffs. Like, they don't get past Belleville without him. Like, he's, you know, he's the guy, he was the, you know, the man on the spot for everything. So, is this his way of telling the organization, like, hey, re-sign me. Like, I can help out. You know, whether it's, you know, I'm sure they know he can help out Rochester. Like, that's not up for debate. But the question is, can he crack the lineup with Buffalo? And can he play the way that they want him to and fit in to the, you know, to the scheme and do things the way they want him to there? You know, considering that, you know, the AHL and the NHL team are supposed to kind of play similar enough styles so that it's seamless when guys get called up. I mean, to me, that tells me there's a role for him at the NHL level, but like, you're not putting him in your top six, which might be the problem. Like, because I mean, you're not putting him in the top six in the NHL. You're just not.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, unless he starts scoring at a rate that like Jeff Skinner did a couple of years back where he scored 40, unless he's scoring at that kind of rate in the NHL, he's not cracking the top six. Like, it's just not happening that way. And, you know, when you've got a guy that maybe his set of skills are better meant for offense than they are defense. No, I don't think he's that bad of a defender. But you know, I'm not watching as closely in Rochester, so I don't really, you know, pick up on a lot of that stuff, you know, personally. But you have to wonder, like, man, like a guy playing like that, you got to keep him, right? Like, you know, there was a rumor that he was going to sign in Switzerland after the season because he didn't get, you know, he didn't really get, you know, a healthy crack at the NHL, or he didn't make it to the NHL, whatever it is. But like, this dude wants to play in the NHL. Like, I just can't see him bailing out on that unless, you know, Swiss team throws a, you know, bucket of money at him. I just can't see him you know, going away from that. But, you know, I think he's a restricted free agent after this season. Like, me personally, I'm keeping him. Like, sign him to a one-way contract so that if he does go back to Rochester, he then becomes the richest guy in playing in Rochester, you know, like,
or maybe a decent trade chip.
Yeah. I mean, there's that possibility too. And you know, I don't think the Sabres organization is really in a spot to give away depth guys. I mean, unless it's a kind of deal where it's like, this absolutely 100% makes us better at the NHL level. I'm just not going to hand out guys that can help you when, you know, if guys aren't playing well at the NHL level, or guys get hurt, you know, guys are going to get hurt. But like, if he's a guy that's like one of your first call-ups, or if he's, you know, if he's already up with the team as, you know, as a guy who's in and out, I don't really want to give away a guy that can do that kind of stuff. Now, you know, maybe it's fool's gold. Maybe he is a guy that's like a, you know, like we say with baseball players, he's a quadruple A player. You know, maybe he's just, you know, a guy that's just going to be an excellent to borderline great AHL guy and just can't get it done. Maybe that's the case, but I think the thing is, we don't know yet. And I think that's where, like that's a big reason why this question made a lot of sense, because we don't really know. You know, you get 17 games with Krueger, 18 with Granato. Like, what do you know? I don't think you really know for sure what you got.
I was gonna say it would be an extremely unfair comparison that you Tage Thompson as an example, but that said, no. I mean, but my point was, the Tage Thompson was a guy that a lot of people, including myself, were ready to cast off as just another dude who's in this organization. And now we see what happens. And again, I'm not suggesting that he's going to become Tage whatsoever.
But I mean, that
patience, more patience could be the answer.
Yeah, I mean, like that comparison is going to happen no matter what from now on. Like that,
absolutely.
Like that's going to be. It's like what happened with the Bills with Allen. Like, you know, people are going to be like, wow, you know, you don't
outlier
give up.
outlier guys. Like it ain't going to happen often, right?
Right. Like, you know, a guy who the first couple of years, you're just like, oh, geez, like, when's this guy going to get it together? You know, in Tage's case was like, is he going to score any goals? Allen's case is like, can he stop throwing the interceptions? Like, can he get more consistent? Yes, they both did. Now, obviously, we'll see what happens with Tage next season. Because, I mean, if it's a one-year flash in the pan thing, well, like, that's a disappointment. But, like, I don't think it's going to be. I think he's – I mean, maybe he won't score at the same volume, but, like, I don't see any reason why he can't. Like, I mean, his game has changed that much. So, but, like, it's an unfair thing to compare that to guys that are just kind of, like, doing this at that, you know, at that level where you're like, man, maybe he's a guy. And it's like, oh, well, maybe he's like Tage. You know, put him in the right spot, he'll blow up. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know that that's, I mean, R2 isn't a guy that Granato's known since he was, you know, 16, 17 years old. Like Granato knew Tage back in when he was in the US program. So he, you know, he had a better idea of how to use a guy like that from back then. So, you know, that's different. And you know what? R2 couldn't be more opposite of what Tage is. R2 is like 5'7". He's a fire hydrant. You can't knock him off his feet. You know, he's a tough, scrappy guy down low, and he's got a nice shot. You know, no one has an Olofsson shot, but like he can rip it. You know, if you set him up for a 1T, he's gonna rip it. But yeah, it's just I wonder if it's just the thing where he's a guy who needs to be in a top six to be able to have that kind of success. And if you've got him in a limited role, you're not gonna get the best out of him. I wonder if that's what the case is for him. Which, I mean, hey. If you trade him to Arizona and he's playing second line minutes for the Coyotes, which he probably would, you know, maybe he lights it up and people are just like, oh, why don't we keep that guy? It's like, well, where are you putting him in the lineup? You know, right. is he taking Olofsson's spot? No. Is he going to get a spot over Quinn? No. Like it's questions like that you have to answer. And I don't know, maybe I've just talked myself into thinking like, maybe they should deal him. But,
I'm certainly thinking that as you're talking. I'm like,
that's what I mean though. Like if you're only going to get the best out of him by putting him with the best offensive players on your team, maybe that's a hindrance. I mean, that's certainly something that other teams would look at and be like, I don't think so, man. Like that, like we need to have that guy in our third, fourth line.
There's the fire hydrant.
That was an ambulance
truck.
Yeah. I can tell the difference between the sirens now, which is great. But
it took almost.
But yeah, like, I don't know. Like it's, I don't know. It's tough because I like R2. I think he's a very good player. And I think he's a guy who can help, but like I said, if he needs to be, you know, in a better offensive setup, then like, that's not really going to do it. Now the Sabres become a team that pushes with all four lines. They push offense with all four, which, you know, if you're, you know, your energy line can keep teams hemmed in, they can score goals too. But to me, I don't know. I look at it. He's a guy who can contend for a spot in the lineup. I don't see a good reason to move a guy like that unless, you know, there's stuff that we just don't know. I mean, Adams and Granato and Seth Appert would know best.
I think this, it's become a fascinating little potential storyline for next season. And the fun part is for me, the funny part I should say is between before he went on this little goal scoring rampage in the playoffs so far, in your tweet, honestly, between all these young guys that are up in Buffalo for the last couple of months, and then of course Quinn and Paterka down there or up in Rochester, I forgot about them. It's like I forgot about them. You reminded me. And one other quick note about the Sabres too. We'll talk about it next week more. They did so. The draft lottery was on Tuesday, as expected. They did not win, but neither did Vegas. So they're picking 9th, and they're picking 16th. Which I think we all expected. I just want to throw that out there. I'm going to start doing some homework because I'm going to try to learn about, say, the top 20 prospects. Actually, not top 20. The first, well, actually, no, because the Sabres could bump package and move up if they wanted to. I'd say after the first three guys, like maybe 4 through 20, I'm going to start learning more about so that we could have some discussions leading up to the draft. But I'm happy with the way things played out. I would have liked him to win. Pretty cool that Shane Wright's going to go to Montreal. I'll admit that. I mean, that's going to be good for the team. I think it's going to be good for the league and good for him down the road.
It's tough for the Sabres to see another number one pick wind up in the Eastern Conference and yeah, also in your division. That's kind of
but it's fun. What's not fun? And God, what a perfect segue, I guess that was, even though I don't like it. Last week's starting five draft, this was not good. We did best movies or best MCU movies, I should say. Joe won with 74% of the vote, and I only collected 26. So Joe, who had the first pick, by the way, and did very well with it, he took Thor Ragnarok, Infinity War, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Black Panther, and Iron Man. I took Endgame, Spider-Man, No Way Home, Avengers, Age of Ultron, Guardians of the Galaxy, and the original Thor. Let me say this, man. I'm embarrassed. I am. Some losses hurt more than others, or some losses are more embarrassing than others. This is very embarrassing for a couple reasons. I spent so much time since April 12th, because that's when I started. I binge watched all 27 MCU movies to get before Doctor Strange came out last week, which, by the way, I have seen that now. And I thought I was really locked in, and I thought I had a pretty good pulse of what fans think as well. Although ultimately it's my opinion,
right?
And that's what we do here. But taking Age of Ultron was just inexcusable. And I got buried. I did not know how much people did not like that movie. I should have taken Avengers Civil War or Captain America Civil War. I should have taken that. I think that would have played well. I did like the original Thor, but
I did too.
But I don't top five or, you know, a top 10 worthy pick. Probably not. I mean, from top to bottom, you didn't have any holes in your game whatsoever. I still stand by. I think Endgame was better than Infinity. I think that's kind of divided. People have a mixed opinion, and I can understand both of them. But I should have taken, in hindsight, I should have taken Civil War, and I should have taken, and if you remember, I tried to steal an extra pick because it was my birthday, and you still wouldn't allow it, which people told me I should have had extra picks for my birthday, by the way. But the original Captain America, with Steve Rogers, I enjoyed that movie a lot. I should have taken it. I think my lack of respect for Iron Man hurts me too. Robert Downey Jr. I think
maybe, yeah.
Well, at least again, because you got him with the last pick. I could have taken Iron Man in the second or third round. I think that would have played better well. But let's put it this way, Joe. I would say this: if we were sports franchises right now, the columnists would be putting me on the hot seat.
Yeah,
people
put you on the hot seat a long time ago.
People inside Team Pat Moran, they would be questioning some of the decision-making that's going on, and maybe it would be time for a change somewhere in my front office. Because again, for as much prep time as I put into that category, which was a handpicked category by me, it was just fucking an absolutely despicable, brutal, embarrassing display of drafting, and rightfully so. I got no complaints. A lot of times I'm like, yo, Joe might've won this, but I don't think it should have been a blowout like that. Right. This got the result that it deserved. I'm going to admit that.
You mentioned the GM thing. You're very good at pulling some like 80s, 90s New York Jets stuff sometimes with the picks.
This was
like if we had a live audience watching us do this, which is terrifying. That's a terrifying thought. But like people would be booing. They would have been you picked Ultron, you would have heard groans and people booing for that one. Like that, you know. I even told you after you picked it, I was like, are you sure? Are you sure you want Ultron?
Say that too.
Like, okay. Like, all right, man. Like, because I knew it was coming. I knew what was coming.
I was like,
you handed me this, but I'm not gonna I wasn't gonna tell you that straight out. Because I mean, listen, I've gotten bit by that before where I was like, I freaking owned him this time and I get trashed.
Sometimes I'll admit this. Sometimes I'll make a pick and I expect the audience to not like it, but yet I'll do it anyway. Because I'm like, I'm going to stand by this. I'm like, I knew I was going to get buried when I drafted Jimmy Snuka in our wrestling rankings, but I just remember growing up absolutely loving the dude, man. You know? So I said, I'm going to stand by that.
Like I had the no Cosby idea. Show.
I had no, but I knew I was going. Yeah. But, and I knew I was going to get backlash. I did not know that people were going to hate on Age of Ultron like they did. That really threw me off. It caught me by surprise. I'm not going to try to deny that.
I'll blame that on you being kind of brand new to the, to like, I mean, you threw yourself, you immersed yourself completely. Like you've done something like there's probably still a handful of those movies I haven't even watched yet where I'm just kind of like, I'll get to it. But like you went all in. So maybe it's just a case of where like you didn't, like you haven't cleared the forest yet. You have, you, you know, you haven't found your way out. You haven't like dipped into like the culture to know what people are big fans of, what people don't like. But like you picked Ultron and I was like, I mean, I roasted you when you did your first like, you know, top 10 ranking and I saw Ultron. I was like, Ultron 4? Like, yeah, I think he had it as high as 4th. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing, man?
It's still in my top 5. I might have to change that though. Not even so much because other people are saying it, but because now I've realized that I've had time to reflect on a lot of these movies and really, because sometimes it takes some time to digest them and really soak them in and understand a lot about the MCU stuff. And I realized now how just thrown together and chaotic that movie really was. And plus, the one complaint I did have from the get-go is I hated James Spader's voice. That bothered me. I felt like I was listening to Robert California from The Office for 2 hours. Didn't like it. But anyway, long story short, that was an ass whooping that was deserved. And you've now won 2/3 of these polls. So, wow. I mean, you're 66% wow. You've done. All right. So this week is going to be, I think this should be fun. We'll see how it plays
It'll
out.
Be fun. Just, you know, we'll see how
well,
it
it's
going
to be fun to do. I mean, obviously we haven't drafted yet and we're doing this live. So it's not like I know who Joe's picking or vice versa. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the best rock band frontman. And again, rock music, I mean, it's self-explanatory. We're talking about rock bands, any era, and the best frontman for, you know, whether it's them being famous or just really talented, whatever it may be, whatever your interpretation wants to be. You went first last week, and you nailed it with Thor Ragnarok, which really caught me. I think it kind of threw me off a little bit, by the way, last week, because I was completely expecting Endgame or Infinity War, one of them. Anyway,
that's fair.
You went first last week. I'm going to go first this week. And look, I don't know. This is the thing. I'm a rock guy to an extent.
Right.
I don't know if there's a right answer or not. I think some people might agree with me. I think some people might not even have this guy in the top 5. I don't know. But I got first pick. And I think the best rock man or rock band frontman ever for me is Freddie Mercury from Queen. Again, I don't know how that's going to play over. Dude was just so good, man. So flamboyant. And I'll never forget. And again, I'm not going to be able to describe rock music probably as much in detail as you could, but I do remember Live Aid and I remember that crowd and him just absolutely having that crowd in the palm of his hand. I think for me personally, at least anyway, I don't think anyone's ever done it better than Freddie Mercury. It kind of sucks that, I mean, what was he? He was only 45 years old when he died in 1991. Queen was formed in 1970 and I know they went through their breakup for a while and stuff, but anyway, yeah, man, not a lot of explanation I can really provide there. I'm gonna pick Freddie Mercury. You're up. You're gonna have two.
Yeah, no, I will never disagree with Freddie Mercury. Like that's Freddie was incredible, and it's very sad how, you know, how he died and everything, because he's just, I mean, God, what, I mean, commanding Wembley Stadium the way he did. Holy geez,
yeah,
like that's something else. You know, I this was a category where, you know, picking first or picking, you know, second, third, I think was okay either way, because there's so many dudes. Mm-hmm. But my next pick is Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin.
Okay. He's
I mean, all you have to do is watch The Song Remains the Same, their weird rock movie where it's half live footage from them playing MSG and half like weird dream like side movie bits that they did. And just have a like just think of how he commands the scene, and like every, you know, every song he just nails it. But also, like, I don't know what they were thinking having the cameraman be in the pit underneath him, but like you're getting a real zoomed in shot of his hog in tight pants, which is just it's terrifying. It's a terrifying sight to see, watch, because you're just watching, you're just kind of like, oh man, okay, all right, okay, all right, okay, man, like, cool, like that's nice, thanks, I don't need that anymore. But But I'm going to go, there's so many men and women. It's not just, well, are we sticking to front men? Or are we doing?
I said two? Front man. I mean, I guess
technically
you can pick a woman.
I'm just thinking, like, you know, maybe down the road or something, but
I'll pick Ann Wilson. I'll take all 10 there from Hart. But anyway,
that's fair. See, there's picks that make sense, like for like in general, but there's just like there's picks that I just don't want to make. And like there's one I don't there's one obvious one that I don't want to make. So I'm gonna skip them. But I'm gonna go with Roger Daltrey. Like these are very boomer picks. I get it. But like I got to see the Who a couple years back at KeyBank Center. And like even though he's like 70 something years old, just an amazing singer, amazing performer, and just like, you know, go back and listen to Quadrophenia and just imagine what it's like to see that live, you know, ideally with, you know, Keith Moon playing drums, but Daltrey, like, man, just what a, like, just an absolute like first rock star, really, like guy who just like showed up and was like, yep, this is what we're doing and I'm going to own it.
I think I know the guy that you said you're not going to take.
But I hope you take them.
I'm going to. Okay. And again, I'm going to keep hammering this point home. I am not, nor can I provide the context with some of these that you can. Mm-hmm. But they're the fucking Rolling Stones. I can't
who I was thinking of. No.
Oh, well, I can't not take Mick Jagger. I have to take Mick Jagger. I mean, he's, again, along with different ways, but Freddie Mercury, just such a flamboyant front man. I mean, who doesn't? You could be 12 years old and you probably know who Mick Jagger is and who the Rolling Stones are. I mean, just an iconic rock band. I really can't provide much more than that. So I'm taking Mick Jagger. The other one I can, because, and I don't know, this might rank high on some people's list. He might not even be in the top 20 of others. But my personal favorite rock band growing up was Journey. So I got to go with Steve Perry. I love Steve Perry. Obviously, Journey's best music by far was when Steve Perry was there. But that Frontier album, Escape album, I remember those albums so well. Journey was one of the first, if it wasn't the first, it was the second concert I've ever been to in my life. Mm-hmm. Just a big Journey fan. I love Steve Perry's voice. I mean, I say this all the time. You remember that song? It's not a rock song, but We Are the World, USA for Africa, when like every singer on earth got together. Steve Perry had one line in that song and he crushed it. It was the best line. He just sung it better than anyone else. And I've said that probably 100 times. But anyway, so I'm going to go Mick Jagger and I'm going to go Steve Perry. I got a feeling this is playing out that the guys that you really want, you're getting your pick of all of them. And the guys that I wanted, I'm getting my pick of all of them as well. So we'll see how it plays out. But you got two coming up.
Yeah, this is one where I think you can, I mean, I'm hoping you can get away with being a little bit weird, you know, not just like, you know, there's 1,000 different like top 10, 25,000 lists of things like this where you can just go, I'll just, carve off of this. Mm-hmm. But I think this is one where your own taste can kind of maybe nudge your way in. At least I'm hoping, because my next pick is Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden. People may not. I mean, if you haven't, I mean, listen, Iron Maiden rules. Okay, let's not get that crossed up. But probably more people remember the character of Bruce Dickinson played by Christopher Walken in the More Cowbell skit. So, so like that, you know, there is some mild pop culture nonsense there with Bruce Dickinson, but the dude, holy crap, man. What a voice. He can still bring it now. Like, they still tour. He flies the friggin' airplane, man. Like, he's a friggin' maniac, and he's so good. He's so great. And yeah, like that to me is a guy that like stood out where I was like, yeah, that's a guy I got to pick him. Similarly, you know what? I don't want to get caught in a metal rut here because it'd be very easy to do that. I'll stay in the metal hole. Ozzy Osbourne.
Okay. Yeah.
Like leading Black Sabbath. Like,
I was taking him next if you didn't, by the way.
Oh, okay. All right. I feel a little better about it.
Or not. Maybe you should not feel good about that. I was going to take him next the way I've been thinking lately.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, if anybody's got an argument about friggin' Ozzy, take a hike, man. Like, that's crazy. That'd be nuts. Ozzy, like, even like Ozzy now, where he's definitely, he doesn't have the fastball. He hasn't had the fastball in a while, but like still owns the stage, can still get everybody fired up. Like the whole place goes nuts when, you know, start playing Crazy Train, everybody loses their mind, either good or bad reasons now, because it gets played every freaking sports game. But sporting event, sports game, what's wrong with me? I'm I gotta stop. Like,
at least you can pronounce hockey names.
You know, I got that going for me, which is nice. But yeah, no, Ozzy, man, Ozzy rules, dude.
I'm in a tough predicament here, man. Bruce Dickinson, I'm gonna admit, was not one that was on my radar, but it makes a lot of sense. Ozzy was gonna be my next one. I have two picks left, and I have three people that I really want to take. I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to prioritize how I think I should. My first one, kind of like with Journey, I feel like I'm gonna go back to my personal upbringing, and I've said this before, I think they're one of the greatest American rock bands of all time. I really enjoyed them. That was Van Halen, and led by David Lee Roth at that time, not Sammy Hagar, Van Halen, which by the way, we did a Van Halen song draft before, which you crushed me on, because I fucked up and took a couple Sammy Hagar songs and got absolutely buried.
Learned a lesson, didn't you?
I did. David Lee Roth was awesome with Van Halen, man. I mean, again, it didn't last forever. I think he was there. I'm looking it up. He was there from 74 to 85. So roughly a decade or so. I really liked, I love Van Halen, and I like David Lee Roth. So that's the first one I'm going to take. Oh, man, this is tough. Because I feel like this one's an awesome front man. The other one's just an amazing lead singer of a band. And I kind of feel like, is there, I mean, there's a difference in a way, but in a way they're one and the same. fuck, I usually don't get like this, man. I'm usually pretty decisive. You know, I'm going to pay homage to his career and the band's career, which has been around literally since before either of us were born. Steve Tyler from Aerosmith. I mean, they've had some iconic hits, and they've been around forever, and they've been making hits forever. I just, again, I'm not the biggest Steven Tyler fan on earth. I'm not going to try to pretend it. Like, I'm this crazy Aerosmith fan. This is kind of one of those almost like respect picks, just their body of work around forever. I will say, though, I do remember this in the mid-80s with Run DMC when they redid Walk This Way, because I was a huge hip-hop fan as a kid. That was a game changer. I just, again, he's just, he's a leading front man, and a very good one. So I'll live with that. So I'm going to go Steven Tyler, my last pick. You got the last one of the draft coming up now.
There's a lot of, there's so many ways there's going to be so many names on the board. We're going to get yelled at about all of them. Like, let's be real. We're going to get screamed at by plenty of people about, why didn't you take so-and-so? Well, we took these other people. That's why. I'm going to go with my heart here, because I screwed up. In our Chris draft. I'm going with Chris Cornell.
Okay.
Good pick. If you ever got to see Soundgarden live or see him solo, you know exactly why I picked him. He's like, just, I mean, the voice, the presence on stage, like, he didn't have to be like a, you know, pump your fists, you know, go crazy, you know, get everybody fired up guy. Like, he didn't have to do that. Wasn't necessary at all. He was so talented, such a great singer, and he made you want the show to last 5 hours. Like, that's like, you know, I got to see him solo once at a kind of a smaller place around Albany, and he played for 2.5 hours, and I was like, it's over already? Like, what do you mean? It's like, oh man, like, come on, you can play more, right? But yeah, he's, oh geez, what a voice. Just what a voice. Some people like Audio Slave still. I mean, the first album was good, but the Soundgarden stuff, man, geez, like, so good. And you know what got me thinking about him was, like, A, that draft, but also like a James Bond conversation came up. Yeah, here's another idea for a draft: James Bond songs, James Bond title songs. Like, I don't know if you're a Bond guy at all, but like, I think that would be a really interesting one.
Let's,
like,
do to, it. To go through. I could get into that, man.
Because his song is freaking amazing. It's so good, and it's the first, it's from Casino Royale, so it's like, it's, you know, the first Daniel Craig one, and like, this song hits you in the mouth like to start the movie. Like, you know, the songs are always kind of like, you know, they're never really that wild or crazy or anything like that. This one's a straight up like rock song smacked in the face. Like it's such a great tune.
I feel like you're kind of giving away a future pick.
Yeah, yeah, no, if we do it next week, you know what my number one pick is.
All right, so before we recap, I got a couple names that I have written down, and we're going to call these honorable mentions. I said I was going kind of back and forth because I'm not sure how great he's known as a front man per se, but Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam was somebody that I was strongly considering. Of course, you can't talk Eddie Vedder without saying Kurt Cobain as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's someone else that I'm sure people might have a take on. Some people would say Bono from U2, but I would be a fraud because I'm just not a U2 guy.
Yeah.
In fact, I took U2 in a rock band or some kind of rock. And I got, again, one of the things you kicked my ass in. I don't remember what it was, but I remember U2 and I got a lot of fucking shit for it.
I took them in one as well and got crap from people. Yeah. Like, hey, stink. Like,
but Bono was a great.
I still want it.
But he's like, a great front man. Jim Morrison from the Doors.
Yeah, that was the one I was never going to pick.
No.
I'm not a Doors guy.
Me neither. Me neither. Axl Rose, of course, you want to go Guns N' Roses in the 80s. And then one, and I'm going to tell you right now, this would have been a good pick except for Buffalo. I just didn't have the balls to do it. John Bon Jovi, man.
Yeah.
Say what you will about Bon Jovi, man. They have been a machine for a long, long time. They were selling out arenas, and he was one hell of a front man. You got to give him his props for that, whether you love him or hate him. And again, if you're from Buffalo, you're pretty much almost everybody hates him. And I didn't have the balls to do it. But
Those are good. Like, other ones that I had in mind were Bon Scott from AC/DC. Like, those early AC/DC albums friggin' rule. Like, I know everybody's like, it's the same song all the time. Okay, kind of, yeah. Like, you're not wrong, but he was awesome. Like, just like they were a light your head on fire band, you know, back then. What I would have been tempted to do is Jimi Hendrix. Like, this, you know, because he's known as like being a solo guy, but the band was the Jimi Hendrix Experience. They were really good. But like, I didn't want to have that, or I didn't want to have like that argument and just be like that.
Because you
would have been like, well, I'm taking Prince and the New Generation. Like,
People would have said that wouldn't have been fair.
Yeah. But I think, you know, I had, you know, Taylor Hawkins on the mind, so Dave Grohl probably would have been a good pick.
Dave Grohl would have been a good one, yeah.
Axl Rose, another good one. And, like, I mentioned women because I was like, well, Debbie Harry with Blondie was, like, an icon. Like, she's incredible. Shirley Manson with Garbage. And even Stevie Nicks with Fleetwood Mac. Even though Fleetwood Mac's weird because, you know, four different people sing songs. Like, I don't know who exactly is the person who's, like, the lead singer. I mean, she's probably it, but that was another point I didn't want to get into arguing, like, to just be like, is she actually the front person? Like, I don't know, like, whatever, we'll have that argument some other day. But those were Chrissy Hynde too from the Pretenders. Like, that's, she's like, what a voice, holy smokes.
There's definitely enough females that we could definitely have done a female category as well. I mentioned Nancy Wilson. You know, one pick I'm glad neither of us made, because I forgot to mention this to you beforehand, because I would have had beef with it, is because I know I've read, you know, I look at other rankings and articles like counting down the best rock front people of all time. And I saw John Lennon. I'm like, really? Paul McCartney sang at the time. Yeah. How can you be called a front man if Paul McCartney singing as much as you are? And again, with Paul McCartney and the Wings, that kind of goes back to your Jimi Hendrix thing. It's pretty much just
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, exactly. So anyway, let me recap these and we'll get out of here. I drafted Freddie Mercury, Mick Jagger, Steve Perry, Steven Tyler, David Lee Roth. Joe took Robert Plant, Roger Daltrey, Bruce Dickinson, the Ozman, Ozzy Osbourne, and Chris Cornell. I do, unlike last week, which I thought was going to be closer than it was, and I was dead wrong, obviously. I think this is going to be interesting. I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm not going to say that, but I do think this is going to be interesting. I think I have more of a, I took straight down the middle mainstream guys with the lean towards the 80s because it was Steve Perry and David Lee Roth. Whereas I think you have your first two picks are classics, you know, with Daltrey and Robert Plant. And then you go hard rock with Iron Maiden and the Oz, and then Chris Cornell, which I think fifth round pick is good. I think he's going to play well too. Might be the difference. I think this is going to be close though.
I'm predicting a win for you this time. I think the Mick Jagger pick really That's one I should have made, probably. That's one where people go like, why did you pass on that? I'd be like, well, I mean, listen, like Hammond and Hahn over like number one picks there, but
good because I need it, man.
Maybe this will be my late birthday gift for you.
I need a little injection of confidence there. Everybody give Joe a follow on Twitter at Joe Yurden. Make sure you check out the Main and Stay podcast, drops on Mondays. Him, Lance Lazowski from the Buffalo News. Get ready for draft mode, man. I'm sure that's coming pretty soon. You start talking about some of these prospects. Mm-hmm. Sabres pick 9th, they pick 16th. Fun stuff. Thanks as always, man. And we didn't take late at night. Fuck the NFL schedule.
Yeah.
See you later, guys. Take care.